Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Sunday, February 14, 2021. Happy Valentine's Day. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and I want to start with Sunday's return of the Michigan Wolverines. They played a basketball game back on January 22nd. They won it, improved to 13-1. Then the program got shut down because of COVID concerns on campus. The Wolverines didn't play for 23 days, a long time away from a basketball court, but they returned Sunday with a game at Wisconsin on America's most watched network, the Network of Stars. Michigan looked rusty early, trailed by as many as 14 points in the first half, down 12 at the break, wasn't great. Second half, different deal. Outscored Wisconsin 40-20. In the final 20 minutes and won 67-59 inside the Kohl Center. Dead leg. Would you like to apologize to Tom Brady's alma mater for picking against them this afternoon? It was disrespectful, foolish, and damaging to your reputation as a college basketball prognosticator.
No. I mean, I'm 26-23 on the year. You're now 22-27. So I got this one wrong, but big picture, I'm still riding high while our listeners...
Somebody's living in the past. I'm focused on the present.
Yeah. They're fading your picks and making money, which is all that matters here. So I picked wrong. Was looking nice and comfy at halftime, though, and then, god damn, they flipped him over. Great job by Michigan there. Huge win. And the committee rightfully...
Yeah. Michigan flipping over Wisconsin.
They did, though. They capsized them. No doubt about it. And listen, the committee had him at number three when the bracket reveal came out Saturday afternoon. It was the rightful spot. Wasn't too bullish. Michigan goes out and proves the committee right. Four of the teams that were in that top 16 reveal wound up losing this weekend, but it was not Michigan. I thought we were going to get five. No siree. Defensively, they were wonderful. Held Wisconsin to 20 points in the second half. And it was like 0.62, 0.63 points per possession in the second half for Wisconsin, which made only one of its 13 three-point attempts, while Michigan on the whole just looked wonderful. Isaiah Livers had a game-high 20. Hunter Dickinson, 11 points, 15 boards, and 5 blocks, continuing his campaign as a top-5 freshman in America, and he stepped up big in the second half. I thought it was extremely impressive. The first half was completely acceptable for Michigan, considering the long layoff, and then... frankly, Juwan Howard and that team got itself together and knocked off a Wisconsin team. I did say this with you on HQ after the game. To me, I would put Wisconsin in kind of the same bucket as Missouri right now. Teams that are going to get to the NCAA tournament, they'll probably have a single digit next to their name when they get there. But too much evidence at this point for me to really trust them. Big picture going forward, to me, the game was more about Michigan winning the way it did in the second half, and it was super impressive. And that's the third best team in America right now.
Just in case it's not clear that I'm being somewhat facetious, there's nothing ridiculous about picking Wisconsin to win this game. The game was a pick'em. And obviously, after the first 20 minutes,
It was ridiculous. I know. I don't care what the line was. It was ridiculous. Okay? I'm owning it. No facetiousness needed. Okay? I was an idiot.
Well, here's the thing. We talked about it pregame on CBS Sports HQ, and we were asked, like, what do we expect? And it's like, who knows? I mean, like, there's evidence that cuts both ways on how teams respond to being off for 3 weeks. I mean, we've never done this, to my knowledge, in a season, you know, where teams could just be off 3 weeks. And so for Michigan, it was 23 days. So you go, okay, what does that mean? What have other teams done? Well, Gonzaga went on a COVID pause, came back and bombed Iowa, no problem. And then there's like St. Louis went on a COVID pause, came back, took back-to-back quadrant three losses, didn't look nothing like the same team. So you just don't know. And then for Michigan, it was actually interesting. They come out first 20 minutes, looked terrible. Wisconsin shot 54% from the field, 71% from three, 100% from the free throw line. And then the second half, Michigan holds that exact same team to 20 points in 20 minutes. Wisconsin was up 53-48 with 7:27 left, and then Michigan closed on a 19-6 run over the final 7:26. The score was tied 59-59 inside of 2 minutes. Michigan closed on an 8-0 run in the final 149. Hunter Dickinson, 11 points, 15 boards, just a monster. Incredible footwork. Dominated Wisconsin's front court players. And I'm with you. I think we talked about this on Friday. I've had people, it might be the same person, you know, tweet me every once in a while with the top 25 and one, like, you have to drop Michigan. They haven't played in forever. And I was just never going to do it. Like, I'm not going to punish somebody for being on a COVID pause. And I was pleased that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee didn't punish Michigan either for being on a COVID pause. They were a one seed in the bracket reveal on Saturday. But I think our buddy Rob Doster has gotten into this habit of making a point that there is no third best team in college basketball. But I respectfully, I would argue there is, and it is Michigan. You just ain't seen them play in a while. But they're now 8-1 in the first two quadrants, with the lone loss coming in quad one at Minnesota. They're now third at KenPom with an adjusted efficiency margin of plus 29.40. Do they belong in the same conversation with Gonzaga and Baylor? Maybe not. But is there a third best team in college basketball? Yes. Who is it? It's Michigan.
Yeah, and if you want to, we have to say Michigan right now. What's interesting, when the stuff refreshes on Monday morning, strength of record, which is a resume-based metric there, it actually has Ohio State ahead of Michigan coming into Sunday. I would think Michigan's going to jump there, but I'll be interested to see. But it's got to be Michigan 3, and then it's got to be Ohio State 4, and then I don't know what you want to do after that. I mean, you know, Illinois did walk into Pinnacle Bank. Got a win, so it walked in. I mean, did that walk involve a bit of a scenic route? Sure. But walked in, had, I don't know, we've reached the point here where I had like 20 people in my mentions when that
I can't tell you how many Pinnacle Bank tweets I had locked and loaded. It was Friday night. I was in my office by myself. I was locked and loaded for a Pinnacle Bank upset. I was hashtag Carol Hoiberg. I was ready to go, and it just didn't happen. Desumu'd.
Desumu'd in a major, major way. And what's wild about that is that Nebraska, like, they came close, and then they win on Sunday. We don't need to dedicate any time to this other than this statement here. They lose at home at Pinnacle Bank, which they always do, and then they win at Penn State to get their first win in 27 Big Ten games. They went on the road. Nebraska, well, happy for you. You got that win. But yes, Michigan 3, Ohio State 4, Illinois 5. And I think that's how I would rank out the top five right now in terms of overall resume. And if anything, it should give fans of those teams a lot of optimism, because I think, especially after this weekend, Michigan winning the way that it did, Ohio State again winning as we expected, not even close against Indiana, Big Ten's got a great shot at having two of the four number one seeds when we get to Selection Sunday.
I mentioned that Michigan's adjusted efficiency margin updated is now at plus 29.40. That is the third best in the country. Gonzaga, now, we had this time where it was Baylor was number one, and then it was like they were within a point of each other. Now it's Gonzaga number one at plus 37.64. Baylor is plus 34.93. Gonzaga's adjusted efficiency margin at this moment, if the season ended today, and it might, you never know, we're in a pandemic. If the season ended today, Gonzaga would have the highest adjusted efficiency margin in the history of the KenPom database.
But it's not the highest in the midst of a season. We've had two teams before actually crack plus 40, according to Pomeroy. The 99 Duke team, and I'm not even going to trivia time here, 99 Duke and 01 Duke, both in the middle of their seasons, got plus 40 in efficiency margin. Goes to prove that doing it once you get to tournament play is really how you got to try and settle. But Gonzaga's got a shot here, trying to get that all-time Kentucky record. And Baylor's just suffering at the moment from not having played any games. So there's a little bit of separation there with Gonzaga and Baylor. As previously detailed on the pod, and I had this in the court report about a week and a half ago, and this is still true, Gonzaga and Baylor separating from Michigan from an efficiency margin standpoint is still pretty wide. And in fact, right now it would be the second largest margin between the second and third team pre-NCAA tournament in the history of KenPom there. But good on Michigan, 14-1, coming off a 23-day pause and winning the way it did defensively. Just huge. Wisconsin, you got issues. I don't think I can trust this team. I did once call this team the most reliable team in the Big Ten. Again, I got to own it. Idiot, right here. Not going to run from it. Michigan's next game now is scheduled to be on Thursday against Rutgers. What remains to be seen since we're kind of hitting on this motif here right now, GP, is they lost the Illinois game from a few days ago. That got postponed. And if I'm the Big Ten, I'm doing everything I can to make sure that Michigan and Illinois play each other because the game was scheduled. These are clearly, you know, two number one type teams for in terms of seed lines and stuff. And so for the benefit of schedule equity, Big Ten tournament seeding, overall NCAA tournament seeding, and Illinois fans, frankly, are desperate to play that game. I hope that we get Wolverines, Illini in the regular season at some point. It's a matter of if and where they'll squeeze it in.
So bottom line, Michigan returns, looks bad for 20 minutes, looks great in the second 20 minutes, wins, improves to 14-1. Welcome back to the sport, Wolverines. It's nice to see you again. There are a handful of power conference teams that are overachieving relative to preseason expectations and are now in the top 10 of my top 25-1. I'm specifically talking about Ohio State, Alabama, and Oklahoma. All three won this weekend. We're going to get into that next, but first, check this out.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So there are a handful of power conference teams that are overachieving relative to preseason expectations and are now in the top 10 of my top 25-1. Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma specifically. All three won this weekend. Ohio State pounded Indiana 78-59. Alabama beat Georgia's brains in 115-82. Oklahoma edged West Virginia 91-90 in overtime. None of these teams were picked higher than fifth in their league in the preseason. But Ohio State is now fourth in the top 25-1 after being picked seventh in the Big Ten preseason poll and only being ranked 23rd in the preseason AP poll. Alabama, now seventh in the top 25-1 after being picked fifth in the SEC preseason poll and only being fourth among others receiving votes, so 29th in the preseason AP poll. And Oklahoma is now eighth in the top 25-1 after being picked sixth in the Big 12 preseason poll and getting zero votes in the preseason AP poll. Norlander, I think you would agree with me that if Gonzaga's Mark Few and or Baylor's Scott Drew go undefeated, they have to be the National Coach of the Year. So let's take them, set them to a side. If you couldn't go with Few or Drew, would you pick Coach of the Year right now from the list of Chris Holtmann, Nate Oates, and Lon Kruger? And if so, who would you go with?
I actually just had to send in my finalist for Coach of the Year, or not finalist, but I guess midseason, whatever it is. And I had to give 15, and obviously all these guys were on the list. If I can't be the top two, I think Holtmann would get my vote right now. Guy just doesn't get enough credit. You know, Chris Holtmann does not get enough credit, and Lon Kruger, by the way, not.
Oh,
that
was
behind.
That was the one that started popping this weekend.
Not
Lon
the- Kruger.
You know, I don't think enough people talk about Lon Kruger. I'm like,
we're here to fix that right now, right?
But by the way, it's the people. Like, who was that? Was that Gottlieb?
It
who
was.
Tweeted that?
It was.
Okay. Like, if people don't talk enough about Lon Kruger, well, you're one of the people. You've got a voice. You've got a prominent voice in college. But talk about him.
Oh my God, Parrish.
Hmm.
Whoa, okay. I got this text that just came in. Hold on. This is a power.
Oh my God. Is it a high major coach?
This is a power conference coach.
Ooh.
You're not going to believe this.
Hmm.
Says, did you watch the Michigan game today? I think this team can win the national championship.
Whoa, hold on. Hold on a sec. Let me put that in my notes,
Do we need to stop this podcast right now and go back and record it from the start?
And make it clear from the jump that we also believe that Michigan could theoretically win the national championship, being the third best team in the country at this moment.
That's big. That's big stuff right there.
That's something else. That's something else.
How about that Lon Kruger? No one talks about him. I would pick,
and I don't mean it specifically about Doug or, you know, I think Goodman was the Chris Holtmann one.
Yeah.
It's just like, we are the people who talk about these things. If you don't think somebody gets talked about enough, talk about them.
Exactly.
You know what? I used to think Terry Teagle doesn't get talked about enough. Now I think he maybe gets talked about a little too much sometimes.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, good deal. Fair enough. I would go Holtmann by a narrow margin at this point. Ohio State has 8 quad one wins. That is the most in America. Gonzaga has 7, and then no one else has more than 6 right now. So all of these teams were unranked in the preseason AP Top 25, right, GP? That was a stipulation you had with this?
No, they were. Ohio State was ranked 23rd in the preseason AP poll.
Okay. But now they're in your top 10.
Correct. I just pulled 3 power conference teams that are in my top 10 and that will be in the top 10 of the AP poll come Monday that are wildly overachieving relative to preseason expectations. None were picked higher than 5th in their own league.
Yeah, I'd go Holtmann there as a refresher. Ohio State was 4th in the committee's reveal. It won, so it did well. Bama was 7th. It won, so it stays good standing. And then Oklahoma was 12th. West Virginia was 10th. And then Oklahoma went on to win. Just goes to show you, by the way, like that's a fun little deal on Saturday, and it was some good insight to what they were doing. But 4 teams lost. Like, so much can change, specifically below the 1 lines. So keep that in mind. I will share a quick tidbit that I also had on HQ and have in my Sunday takeaways. If you are a fan of one of the 4-1 seeds, then you should have a lot of optimism going forward, because every single year we've done this in February, which started in 2017, 3 of the 4-1 seeds in February were 1 seeds on Selection Sunday, and that was supposed to be the pattern last year as well. The only flip was, I think Dayton hopped in instead of San Diego State, and that was the change. But otherwise, Gonzaga, Baylor, and Kansas were 1 seeds in February last year. They obviously would have been 1 seeds going in had we had a 2020 tournament. And the 3 times that we did have a tournament, one of the 1 seeds wound up winning. In 17, Carolina; 18, Villanova; 19, Virginia. So, Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan, Ohio State fans, recent history would just kindly nudge and suggest that you've got a really healthy shot at winning the national championship this year. The Buckeyes right now.
I wish a high major coach. Listen, I'll take your word for it, but I would prefer if a high major coach could text me that.
Listen, the night's still young, sweetie. So we'll have to wait and see about all of that. But Oklahoma is probably the one. I put this in my takeaways. If they continue to get these really high-level wins, then they're not going to be like this Final Four sleeper. You might still be able to get in on them now. Like, I haven't checked the latest futures if you're into laying down some cheddar on national championship winners. But 17th in the net heading into Sunday, GP. Oklahoma, 5-5 in quad one. It doesn't have a loss outside of quad one, and it has really good high-level wins. I would feel like that would be a true team with real value that you can get right now and could be kind of a Final Four dark horse, because they're always just a little bit off the radar there. And they're unquestionably a top 10 team. Bama's the only, I think I said this on the pod before, Bama's the only team you can trust in the SEC. I mean, Tennessee goes down to LSU, and we'll get to that in a few, but Bama's just the only one right now from a bracket perspective that we could say from that league that you can trust to make the second weekend, which is kind of strange considering, like, it did have three teams in the top 16 reveal, but I'm sorry. Like, I can't trust anyone else aside from the Tide right now in the Southeastern Conference.
I'm picking Alabama to go to the Final Four as long as it's not in the same region with Gonzaga or Baylor. It's my favorite team.
Now, Bama was in the region with Gonzaga, if memory serves correct, right? So that's a problem as of now. But yeah, I hear you. If they don't wind up getting there, I can see that.
And what they did on Saturday was exactly what I've talked about. Why they're not only the type of team that can go to a Final Four, they're the type of team. There are some teams that I genuinely believe, even if they play their best, they cannot beat Gonzaga. And even if they play their best, they cannot beat Baylor. I mean, there's some top 15 teams that I think, even if they play their best, they're not beating the Zags and they're not beating the Bears. I think Alabama could beat either one if it played its best. And the reason is exactly what we saw on Saturday and exactly what we've talked about for, it feels like, over a month now. They are so committed to a very specific style of play that when they play well, they can bomb you. They're now, I don't know if you noticed this, number one in adjusted defensive efficiency. Top defense in America belongs to the Alabama Crimson Tide. They're now ninth in tempo. So the style of play is just dangerous. They're super fast. They really guard you, and they're going to launch, on average, 33s on you. If they're hot, you're dead. If they're not, they can still beat you. And against Georgia, they were hot. 18 of 30 from three, 60%. Win the game by 33 points. That is scary, even if you're Gonzaga Baylor. If you know this team is gonna get up and down the court with you, you know they're gonna guard you. They're better defensively than you are. I mean, at least statistically speaking, at this moment, and they're gonna take 33s. And if they are hot, it's hard to keep up. That is the most dangerous team in the country, not named Gonzaga or Baylor, is in my opinion Alabama.
Dangerous.
It doesn't mean necessarily that I think they should be ranked third, or I think they should be.
I hear what you're
right
saying,
now.
Though. I got.
I'm
you.
Just saying if they play well, there are teams that if they play well, I don't think they're good enough to win the national championship. If Alabama plays well, like if Alabama gets to a Final Four and then plays well, an A-level game, it can beat Baylor and it can beat Gonzaga.
Yeah, by the way, Region 1 in that bracket reveal, super fun from the top four perspective. Gonzaga, Bama, Oklahoma, who we're just talking about, top 10 team, and then Iowa as the four seed, and we know its top end on offense can be as good as just about anyone in the country there, so that's probably not how it's going to wind up. We're 1 month from Selection Sunday, by the way, but it's certainly plenty of fun to think about.
Just for some context, I did go look at the preseason KenPom rankings and compare them to where they are right now with Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma, the three schools we're talking about. Ohio State was preseason number 10 at KenPom. So the AP voters had them low. I also had them low, although I had them 18th in the preseason top 25 and one. So I didn't have them as low as the AP poll, but I had them too low. Ohio State was 10th in the preseason. They're sixth right now at KenPom. So four spots better than they started. Oklahoma was 32nd in the preseason at KenPom, and they are up to 21st right now, so 11 spots better. Alabama was 46th in the preseason at KenPom, up to number 8, so 38 spots better. If, for whatever it's worth, if you go by the KenPom ratings, the team that has overachieved most out of these three teams we're discussing is Nate Oates' Alabama Crimson Tide.
There we go. All right, what else from the weekend? Let's do a little tour here, GP. What's kind of sticking out to you?
Yeah, well, okay. Well, there was lots of notable results. I'll just pop through them real quick. You can take it wherever you want to take it. As previously mentioned, Illinois won at Pinnacle Bank on Friday night. That's a quad three win, but boy, it feels like a quad one to me. Feels like a quad one to me. Creighton bombed Villanova, won by 16 inside the CHI Health Center Omaha. Michael Carter Williams' brother had 25. Virginia ensured UNC could not celebrate maskless for the second straight Saturday. They beat the Tar Heels by 12. Arkansas won at Missouri. I moved the Hogs into the top 25 and won. Iowa beat Michigan State by 30 at the Breslin Center. Tom Izzo described himself as, quote, embarrassed. Tennessee lost at LSU by double digits. Five-star freshman didn't play well. That was a problem. And Loyola Chicago and Drake split a couple of games this weekend. Loyola Chicago blew the Bulldogs out on Saturday. Drake won in OT on Sunday afternoon. Take it where you want to take.
All right. in order of what you just mentioned there, we touched on Illinois. I have a I'll put the link in the pod description. Let me just ask you this real quick. Io DeSumo versus Luka Garza is a Big Ten player of the year.
It's closer than people think.
Yeah.
I'm still leaning toward Luka Garza, yeah, but DeSumo was awesome.
Come on.
Inside Pinnacle. But he, one of the all-time great performances by a visitor inside Pinnacle Bank.
Without a doubt. Right now, here's how they stack up. Garza's at 24.5 points a game. DeSumo's at 21.7. Rebound-wise, Garza's got him 8.4 to 6.2. Assists, it's not close, though. DeSumo's 5.1. Garza's 1.8. And then Luka's at 1.6 swats a game. DeSumo's 1.1 swipes. From two-point range and three-point range, Garza's got it. 59.3 to DeSumo's 51. And then from beyond the arc, it's 43.1 for Garza and 40.3 from DeSumo. If you need those stats again, you can click on through the pod description and read as you listen to us talk here. I think it's a real discussion, though. First of all, DeSumo is the first player since Evan Turner in the Big Ten to be averaging 25-5 at least. When Turner did it, he won National Player of the Year. And really, for all intents and purposes, if DeSumo's chasing and nipping at Garza's heels in the Big Ten, then he's doing also the same at the national level. And Illinois ranks higher in the conference standings, ranks higher in all of the metrics there. It's to me, it's Garza right now, but it actually is a real race with 3 weeks to go. You agree?
I do agree, and I do. I could envision Io being Big Ten Player of the Year, and also by that, if you're Big Ten Player of the Year in this season, you got a chance to be National Player of the Year by definition. And if Iowa, some of this is team related, as we've talked about before. If you want to be National Player of the Year, you usually need to be a statistical monster on a very good team. Obi Toppin was that last season for Dayton. A great player, statistical monster for a team that was going to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. If Iowa, you know, goes the wrong way in these final few weeks and finds itself, you know, ranked outside of the top 20 or even unranked, and Illinois is looking like a one seed and Io's still performing at this level, absolutely, it could flip around. He was, again, awesome on Friday night. He got Illinois' final 10 points in regulation. They were down six with 2:36 to go. This is when I was crafting.
Yeah, I know.
I was saving pictures of Pinnacle Bank. I had pictures of Pinnacle Bank saved both in the daytime and at night. I mean, I was into it, man. I wasted too much time studying Pinnacle Bank on Friday night. So Illinois down six with 2:36 left. He scores the final 10 points in regulation to force overtime. Then he scored their first 5 points in overtime. So he had 15 straight for Illinois, just took over, finished with 31. 22 of them came after halftime.
Just monster performance. I understand the opponent, but nevertheless, great stuff for Illinois. Keep an eye on that going forward with those two. Creighton winning the way that it did, I thought was highly significant. Credit to Rob Anderson, Blue Jays stud SID. He sent out since 2013-14, only eight times has a Villanova opponent shot at least north of 56%, and four of those eight times have been the Creighton Blue Jays. They tend to have really strong performances. That's a nice little, you know, I understand kind of nationally, even though both teams are relevant, it doesn't really flare up. It's like, oh, Nova versus Creighton, it's coming up this weekend. But they actually they have a tendency to play some really, really nice and memorable games there. For Creighton, it just puts itself in a nice position to get a really good seed going forward if Marcus Zagorowski can continue this. So I think the context is important. Has surgery a year ago, comes back, but he's basically out till mid-July. And then he was out in the preseason again with some lingering issues, and then had a hamstring problem like a month ago. So he has really not been fully healthy. If he's fully healthy now, it changes the dynamic of that program. And for Villanova, just kind of big picture, I think barring the Wildcats winning out, and that includes a Big East tournament championship, I think the loss, even though it's completely respectable, given all the other competition for the one line, this probably means that Nova's really seeking toward a two seed. To get a one, I think it's going to have to win out there. So that was my big takeaway from that one. Any particular thoughts on that game, or you want me to keep rolling?
Well, Zagorowski goes big and just carves Villanova up, especially in the second half. And, you know, it's not a make or break. Like, both these teams are in the NCAA tournament. Both these teams are going to get good seeds. But we talked about this at some point over the past week, I believe. Creighton's got quad three losses at home. Like, there's not another team in the top 25 and one that's got three quad three losses. And so, you know, you can't do anything about them now, but you can try to get big signature wins to make up for it. Like, if you're going to lose games you're supposed to win, the best way to offset it is to go win games you're supposed to lose. And they were an underdog at home on Saturday. So to win that game by double digits, again, it just balances out the resume a little bit.
Arkansas beats Missouri, and we said what we needed to say about Missouri on the last podcast. Here's my question for you. Listen, first of all, it's Arkansas's first win over an NCAA tournament-level team yet this season. Played a bad non-con. That's actually a very meaningful win for the Hogs there. Woo pig suey. Must go shirtless afterward in celebration. No shirt, but a mask. Got to respect that move. My question is, what needs to happen, Cutie, for you to rip off your shirt bare-chested in celebration? What's got to go down for you to, for that to happen? Were you going bare-chested Friday night if Nebraska won? Is that what was that going to happen?
I might have.
You would have.
I might have.
I think you would. I think, you know what? I think you were like half-nip. I think you were half-nip with about a minute to go. You just couldn't quite pull the trigger.
I don't like being topless. Even in the shower, I'm uncomfortable. I don't enjoy it. I don't like
being topless even in the shower.
I don't enjoy. I mean, I do it, you know, because it feel like you have to, but I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it. I have swim shirts. I'm not trying to die of UV rays. You think I'm trying to die of UV rays?
Okay.
So by the way, if you're ever ashamed of your body, you don't have to like wear a t-shirt into the ocean because then you look like an idiot. But if you wear actual swim shirts, and then you can just say, I'm not trying to die of UV rays. I'm just trying to protect my skin. You can sort of sell it a little bit. So that's what I do. I own several swim shirts,
like six,
colors. I have white and black, red and blue, whatever color you need, I got it.
Listen, Sugar, on this Valentine's Day edition of the podcast, you have nothing to be ashamed about with that body of yours, okay? There's no shame whatsoever. You're a well-built man.
I hate myself.
Okay, you're a well-built man. Well, glad we covered that part of it.
When I see Musk go topless in the locker room, some people laugh. Some people might roll their eyes. My first thought is, there is no scenario I would ever do that.
No shot. All right. Fair enough. Unless Nebraska gets a home win in Pinnacle Bank over a top five team.
Then I have to go topless on HQ.
I was gonna say like maybe on the pod when we go to video, but if you want to try and pull it off on HQ, I'm not going to stop
you.
No,
this is the new deal.
Oh boy.
Nebraska upsets a top five team inside Pinnacle Bank. I immediately text Chris Hassel and say, "Get behind the desk. Come straight to me for reaction." And rather than all I've got is my IFB clipped on the back of my neck, bare neck.
That's amazing. Couple more here. Couple.
What if you were watching HQ and I was breaking down Nebraska's upset with no shirt on?
Just yes. Oh boy. Oh. I'm so happy that I am able to provide these visuals. I knew bringing up Musk taking off a shirt would pay off. Before I get to Loyola Chicago Drake, I'm going to mention two results that you didn't bring up that were important. VCU wins over Bona to get to 15-4. It's now 32nd in the net. That's huge for their at-large chances. Big Friday night result. And then probably the best or most needed non-Drake win of the weekend was UConn. Also, like, Drake did not have its best player, and UConn, again, did not have James Booknight. The Huskies go to Xavier, previously to lost Xavier. They get the win. UConn, by nature of the victory, keeps itself in the NCAA tournament conversation. They won 80-72. It's the second quad one win for UConn this season. I would argue it's its best. They also have a neutral court win over USC. USC's the better team, but it had Booknight. This was without Booknight on the road in a really big situation there. So credit to the Huskies. They at least stay in the tournament conversation. I wouldn't put them in the field just yet, but by getting that, I think they've got a decent shot there. UVA over UNC. I was just wondering if UNC would keep it close. They don't even score 50. It's the first time in the history of that rivalry that Virginia's held a 7-game win streak against Carolina. So good on Virginia. It's got a distant chance, I think, at a one seed if it doesn't lose again. It's clearly looking to be the class of that conference. And then Loyola Chicago Drake, that was the best possible outcome for the Valley in period. Because Loyola Chicago rolls on Saturday, Parrish. Because of that, gets into the top 10 of KenPom. Right now, still number 10, even after the loss. I just refreshed it when we started the podcast. Even with the loss logged at KenPom, top 10, number 10, behind Virginia and ahead of Villanova. And then for Drake, to get the home win, it's going to register as a quadrant one win. So both of those teams are now going to be 1-1 in the top echelon there. And they're going to keep the chance of a two-bid valley alive. Apparently there was some bad blood at the end of it. I don't know if the post-game press conferences would have revealed any more information. Obviously, we've been podcasting since that game went final. But give me this in the title game. I'll tell you this. If both
I watched the end. I didn't see anything.
I didn't see anything either. I don't know what was going on there. No idea. But, you know, the lights went off. It was like a Drake concert for there for a couple minutes. So I don't know what got lost in translation with the darkness and the lights. But if these teams don't lose again until the league tournament, I think they're both going to be in. And I'm not even saying they got to both face each other as the 1 and 2 seed in the title game. I think if they can both go and not lose again, Loyola Chicago's 18-4. It's got 3 more scheduled games against the Valpo Pacers on Wednesday and then home against Southern Illinois twice. That's 3 straight home games. If Loyola can get to 21-4 and be like a top 10 KenPom team,
they're fine.
They got to be fine. Now, just to be clear here, the predictives love them. Entering the day, they were 14th in BPI, 10th in KenPom, 34th in Sagarin's a little lower. The results-based metrics, KPI 42, strength of record 38, and the net is, to me, net's just a blend of both. I think they're still good. For Drake,
The committee is not going to leave out a, what did you say, 4-loss team?
It would be a 5-loss team because if they lost one more time. So it would be a 5, let's say it's a 5-loss team and it's 19th in KenPom. Let's just say, let's be reasonable. I still don't.
They're not leaving that team out. Leave that team out.
I would agree with you, which is, and if Loyola had won this game today, then I, without a doubt, it would not even be a question because they would have had another quad one win in that stake. Drake is now 20-2. It's got a tougher road ahead. It still has 4-5 more scheduled games in league play. 3 of them are on the road, including 2 at Bradley, which is good enough to beat Drake. So it's actually imperative for Drake, in my opinion, to not lose again until the Valley Tournament. If it can win all these 5 to get to 25-2, then I think it can lose anywhere in the Valley Tournament, and it will still clearly get in. That was a huge weekend for the Valley, and in terms of results and the way the games happened, I actually thought it happened perfectly. Remember, Drake does not have its best player, Tank Hemphill, foot surgery. If he returns this season, the earliest that they project he could come back would be the start of the NCAA Tournament, so that was a big one.
That's the problem for Drake, is that they've got losable games on their schedule, and they don't have their best player. The reports are that he could, first off, broke his foot last Wednesday against Northern Iowa, surgery on Thursday. So they did the surgery as quickly as he can. 2 weeks, resume activities, possible return to games in 4 weeks. So you're going 4 weeks from last Thursday. That's March 11th. Title game of the MVC tournament is March 7th. So he's likely done, as you noted, until the NCAA tournament at the earliest. And again, there's no guarantee Drake's going to get to the NCAA tournament. Right now, just 1-1 in quadrant one, 4-0 in quadrant two, but they got that quad three loss that came at the Homer and Janet Drew Center. So that's tough. I do think there is a scenario where both Loyola Chicago and Drake get in. But if you're the MVC and you're trying to map that right now, you want Drake to win your auto bid and Loyola Chicago to get an at-large, because Loyola Chicago is going to have a much better chance at an at-large than Drake.
That is likely the case. Drake was 40th when the day started. We won't know the net ranking, and I'm talking net, until Monday when it refreshes. My guess, this is a blind guess, I'm going to say Loyola, which was 10, is going to drop down to like 14, and Drake will go from 40 to about 35, and it's got 7 road wins. So here's the big thing. It can't lose in the regular season again. It get 10 road wins. That stuff will add up and will help in the second quadrant there in particular. So I think it's imperative, and it's going to be tough, obviously. But they still have a shot there. If Drake had lost at home to Loyola Chicago, it would have basically had almost no at-large case at all. But getting the win was highly significant. And, yeah, that was a nice little game. Took forever. I mean, we started podcasting 30 minutes after I thought we were going to. But nevertheless, Drake, UConn, VCU, some of the biggest bubble-level wins that we saw over the weekend.
You mentioned Virginia has a chance to get a 1 seed. You're right. That resume is starting. As I was going through the top 25 and 1 late Saturday night, it's sort of surprised me a little bit that the resume looked as good as it looked. At Saturday night, it featured 0 quad 3 losses, and then Sunday morning that San Francisco loss flipped back to quad three because Gonzaga beat San Francisco by a billion, 100 to 61. So right now the Cavs are 8-2 in the first two quadrants with a quad three loss to San Francisco. None of this stuff matters as much as it sounds like it matters, but I do think it's notable. USF, San Francisco, they were 97th in the net on Saturday. So it was a Q2 loss on Saturday for Virginia. Then Gonzaga beat San Francisco's brains in. USF dropped to 101st in the net. So that makes it a quad three loss because the cutoff for a neutral court game is 100. 100 is a Q2. 101 is a Q3. USF went from 97th to 101 after losing to Gonzaga. So that wasn't ideal for Virginia. Not the biggest deal in the world, but having a clean quad three, it just looks cleaner. It just looks better. And right. So if you're a Virginia fan and you really want to get in the weeds, like, you need to root for San Francisco to get back into the top 100 of the net. We mentioned Luka Garza, Ayo Dosunmu. They are the obvious candidates for Big Ten Player of the Year, perhaps for National Player of the Year. Luka, it's weird. You wouldn't assume this. Iowa beats Michigan State on the road by 30. Luka Garza was just okay. 3 of 11 from the field, 8 points. It was the worst loss for Tom Izzo at home in his head coaching career. And so now in the same year, we got Bill Self suffering his worst loss inside Allen Fieldhouse ever. Tom Izzo suffering his worst loss inside the Breslin Center ever. Mike Krzyzewski already has 4 home losses for the first time in 14 years. We've touched on it, but like, that's pandemic related. There's no way these teams are getting their brains beat out at home by these margins if they had the home court advantages they usually have.
I agree. That was the notable thing with that game. Luka actually had a bad game, brought his stats down, makes the race with Ayo that much closer, and in the process, worst loss in the history of that building and for Izzo at home, and Michigan State's at-large chances have now evaporated. They need to win the Big Ten tournament.
You want to get to some Apple Podcast reviews?
Let's do it, cutie, and let's do it in a GIF here. I got some Valentine's Day dinner awaiting me here.
This one comes from Drew. He ran into your brother.
Okay. Which one?
Henrik.
Okay. Oh, I've been waiting for this dude to win a golf tournament for 8 years.
Here's what Drew wrote. He said, I happened to run into Norlander's brother, Henrik, while he was warming up on the range at Pebble Beach Pro-Am today. He sent this on Thursday. As he was leaving the range, I made sure to let him know I was a big fan of the pod, and he said he would pass the word along. He then proceeds to ask me if I have any cash to spare, and I gladly threw him some cash, but couldn't help but wonder why this tour golfer would need cash from a college student. Turns out, GP and Harold Varner III had cleaned Henrik's clock and skins the day before, and he was flat broke. Henrik did respond well to his adversity, however, by firing a 64 in the opening round of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, leaving him just 2 back from the lead. Here's hoping he can finish high enough to financially recover from the beating he took from GP and HV3. How often do people bring up Henrik Norlander to you?
Not often, but it's happened a bit more now because he's creeping. He's creeping on these leaderboards, but he's been around for a while, and I'm waiting for my homie to get this done here. Let's go. Let's rep the Norlanders around the world. Unfortunately, he faded on the weekend.
He did fade on the weekend. I'm trying to see exactly where he finished. Oh, no. Tied for 26. He shot a final round 73. Dead leg.
No good.
Daniel Berger, your winner out at Pebble Beach. Daniel Berger, first win ever on the PGA Tour. Where did it happen?
TPC
Southwind. Trivia time.
TPC Southwind.
TPC Southwind is correct. Daniel Berger's second ever tour win. Where did it happen?
TPC Southwind.
That's true. He won back-to-back tournaments. It's his first 2 wins ever, and now he's just added a win at Pebble Beach. You ever want to play Pebble Beach? Is that like on a bucket list thing for you?
It is. I've played Torrey Pines out there in California and San Diego, but never Pebble. Kind of hard to get on, I feel like.
I don't think it's that hard. It's like 500 around.
I play it. Yeah, that's definitely. I mean, the course.
Me and my 3 buddies that I play with all the time have sworn that we're going to go this summer. That we're going to go play this summer.
All right.
The most notable one I've ever played is Kiawah Island. The ocean course at Kiawah Island. I think the PGA Championship is there next year. So I played that one, but I've never played Pebble Beach, but I'm going to try to knock it out in 2021. Next Apple review. This one comes from someone who described themselves as 2-year-old Tony Hinkle. First off, a disclaimer. I've been privileged to work with both Matt and Gary as part of my work in college basketball, and the vibe they have on the pod is just like talking with them in person. The pod feels like I'm sitting at the bar with friends talking college hoops, which is perfect. Whether you're a first-time listener or have been doing so since the Goodman-Borzello days, this should be one of, if not the, first stop for college hoops fan. So this is somebody we know, but they did not publicly acknowledge themselves. But I take that as a compliment. That is exactly what I want the podcast to sound like two friends talking, and the same way we talk in real life. Like, the only difference between talking to me in real life and listening to this podcast is that I cut
your shirt off
in real life.
You got your shirt off.
And I would have my shirt off. That's exactly right. Like, when I used to go out pre-pandemic, every once in a while I'd meet a stranger and you'd just be talking randomly and they'd go, "Oh, you sound just like you sound on the radio." I'd be like, what did you expect? Like, I don't have a fake radio voice and then another voice in my own personal life. Like, this is, I try to on radio just sound like me. And apparently, according to at least one person who knows this in real life, it comes across that way on the podcast. So I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you for leaving that. Last one comes from Chucks, it looks like. And here's what Chucks wrote. "Love you guys, pod. As a former hooper," so it's a former baller, "as a former hooper, it is so insightful to hear people actually use stats instead of use superficial, gaudy numbers. My favorite pod was listening to you guys talk about the holidays and you guys' sarcastic quips. Diction and grammar policing is hilarious. Without this pod, I would be stuck listening to the awful caricature of other pods. One note, though. I would love if you could stop coming after my guy, Jeff Goodman. You do not want to get on his bad side and be on the end of one of his Twitter rants." Do we come at Jeff Goodman?
Coincidentally enough, this was the same exact one that I picked out. We're not going to stop. We're going to continue to poke and prod our buddy, Jeff Goodman. And I appreciated this. I appreciated this review. And listen, he sets himself up for it. Plus, we know that he doesn't listen to the podcast. So that makes it even more fun. The fact that he's completely unaware of all this because he's busy, you know, making bets every morning and doing his own deal there. So, you know, it's completely fine. By the way, I picked this one specifically because I'm going to toss out a quick grammar tip to people. So I notice on occasion people use the word notorious incorrectly. Okay. Notorious has a negative connotation for it. So you would not use this phrase like this. This would be incorrect. Gonzaga is notoriously one of the best teams in the WCC. No. Notorious, it has a negative quality to it. It means like infamous. Infamous doesn't mean you're well-known. It means you're well-known for doing something very bad. So this gets misused a lot. When people use the word notorious when they think they're saying something might be noteworthy, it might be a bit of a malapropism, if you will, but I appreciate the grammar note on that. We were overdue for a new one, and so keep it in your back pocket going forward.
Tell me if I use this correctly. Jeff Goodman is infamous for unnecessarily picking a fight with Jerry Stackhouse.
That would be correct.
Picking a fight with Jerry Stackhouse?
I have no idea. Not currently blocked by Jerry Stackhouse.
I'm not either.
In fact, followed
by... Not only am I not blocked, I'm followed by Jerry Stackhouse.
I too am followed by Jerry Stackhouse. Jerry Stackhouse is getting a no-context preview picture on this, by the way. Why not?
I'm pro Jerry Stackhouse. I'm going to be a believer. I will say, when he worked in the G League and worked with the Grizzlies, he was here in Memphis for a year, I think. He had a good reputation. People spoke well about him.
Walked into a tough spot there, and Vandy's not that good, but we'll see if you can get a turnaround.
All right, we ready to get out of here?
Let's go.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry MF and Teagle, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys for once again listening to the Eye on College Basketball podcast in the middle of the dumbest pandemic I've ever lived through my whole life. It's gotten so dumb I can't even say it correctly anymore. If you enjoy the podcast, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. Do that, and we will talk to you again on Wednesday morning. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.